I went to college with some smart students. One of my acquaintances in particular, she really impressed me because as soon as she graduated from Baylor, she went to Duke and got a dual degree in law and divinity. And I just thought that was the most impressive thing. I don't know what she's doing now, and I honestly could tell you what sorority she's in. I could tell you where she was from. I can't place her name. Which maybe makes it unfair to tell a story about her, but the story that got relayed to me about this young woman, this colleague of mine, well, it went like this. Her friends were with her one time, and the wind was blowing really hard. So hard that it was a distraction, and it was bothersome. And so she finally looked up and asked them, "How can it be so windy if there's no trees around?" The implication, of course, is that this young woman, who was full of book smarts, thought that the trees made the wind, as if the branches were fans blowing the wind. It took y'all a little while. It's a silly story that I believe was true. And even if it wasn't true, it could have been true. It's far-fetched to consider that trees act like fans that make wind. But you know, some people might think that. I don't know how she thought this. She was from San Antonio, Texas. There are not a lot of trees in San Antonio, but it is windy. But it speaks to a point. And the point is not that there's breeze and not where the wind comes from and not that the Spirit of God is blowing or does not blow, but it speaks to the fact that sometimes we misplace where the power of something comes from and where it's best utilized. More specifically, we misplace when and where we most and best experience the power of God around us. In this morning's gospel readings, and in everything that we have kind of done in worship leading up till now, we'll see something that seems like the most important power of God. And it certainly is an important instance when Jesus is transfigured in front of his disciples. But it makes me wonder, is that where, as we keep reading, God's power is most at work? Maybe Peter gets his understanding of God's power a little bit misplaced in this story. And maybe sometimes we do the same. This morning we're going to hear the story of Jesus' transfiguration and then a healing story right after it. It comes from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 9, and we're actually going to read verses 28 all the way through verse 43. Now about 8 days after these sayings, Jesus took with him Peter and John and James, and they went up the mountain to pray. And while he was praying, the appearance of his face changed, and his clothes became dazzling white. And suddenly they saw two men, Moses and Elijah, talking with him. They appeared in glory and were speaking of his departure, which he was about to accomplish at Jerusalem. Now Peter and his companions were weighed down with sleep, but since they had stayed awake, they saw his glory with the two men who stood with him. And just as they were leaving him, Peter says to Jesus, "Master, it is good for us to be here. Let us make three dwellings, one for you, and one for Moses, and one for Elijah," not knowing what he had said. While he was saying this, a cloud came and overshadowed them, and they were terrified as they entered the cloud. And then from the cloud said a voice that said, "This is my Son, the Chosen. Listen to him." And when the voice had spoken, Jesus was found alone. And they kept silent and in those days told no one any of the things they had seen. Now on the next day, when they had come down from the mountain, a great crowd met them. Just then, a man from the crowd shouted, "Teacher, I beg you to look at my son. He is my only child." Suddenly, a spirit seizes him, and all at once he shrieks. It convulses him until he foams at the mouth, and it mauls him and will scarcely leave him. "I begged your disciples to cast it out, but they could not." And Jesus answered, "You faithless and perverse generation, how much longer must I be with you and bear with you? Bring your son here." When he was coming, the demon dashed him to the ground in convulsions, but Jesus rebuked the unclean spirit, healed the boy, and gave him back to his father. And all were astonished at the greatness of God. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. This story of Jesus' transfiguration is well known. We preach about it every year on this day right before Lent starts. And it's placed right in the middle of Jesus' ministry to hearken us both backwards and forwards. It's a deeply spiritual event. It is a deeply theological event. It is an unusual event, the likes of which these disciples had never seen. Oh, they'd heard of it because their mind was probably immediately turned back to Moses being up on that mountain with God. So they should have seen a thread of connection from Moses to Jesus to what would later be an ascension. But they hadn't seen anything like this in the life and ministry of Jesus quite yet. Now, his ministry had been going well. If you have one of those Bibles with subtitles, you could flip through chapters 7, 8, 9, you could see how busy Jesus was. In chapter 9 alone, Jesus sends out disciples two by two. He feeds 5,000. He's named the Messiah. He then heals a boy. He predicts his death and emphasizes the cost of following him. He's teaching, he's healing, he's providing, he's meeting needs. He's trying to shape these disciples. And he heads up on the mountain in the midst of all of this busyness. And there's a distinct sense of intention. The event sort of reveals who Jesus is and what we're supposed to do about that. And then we see what happens. Jesus is on the mountaintop. The sleepy disciples manage to push away their sleepiness to see this divine encounter between Jesus and Moses and Elijah, two who were believed to be sitting in heaven at the right hand of the Father. And so when Jesus is there meeting them, it's a miraculous vision, but it's not just to impress the disciples. It's to confirm that Jesus is connected to the Father in heaven, who had also spoken at his baptism. And then speaks here again. Luke records that voice from heaven affirming Jesus as the beloved Son. And all who hear the story are to listen to him. And, like, let's be honest, this must have been a sight to behold. It must have been remarkable. The disciples were weary and tired, but immediately they knew what it was they were seeing. And Peter didn't probably remember everything that happened after Moses came down off the mountain, but remember that when you're up on the mountain and you start glowing because you're with God, that's a good thing. And so Peter offers to build some huts or some forts. He wants to set up a more permanent situation for all of those who were seeing this. He wanted to remain on that mountain as long as they needed to, or maybe even set up forts so that they could always go back there if they needed to. But that wasn't at all what God wanted for Jesus, and it wasn't at all what Jesus needed to be about. Peter was just lost in the moment. Now, we've gotten lost in the moment before. Have you ever been caught in the middle of a sales pitch? Oh, this isn't to speak ill on people who are in sales at all. Nor is it to speak ill of those of us who have, you know, been recipients of a sales pitch. But have you ever been in the middle of a sales pitch and decided to do something that under normal circumstances maybe you wouldn't have made the decision to do? If your cell phone works anything like my cell phone works, every week you get more calls than you care to admit from numbers you don't recognize. And one of those phone calls for me comes from, I think, the Marriott Vacation Club. Some of you are getting that call. Oh, I have won more times than I can count, 3 nights at a Marriott Vacation Club where they want to bring me there and wine me and dine me. And all I have to do is sit through one seminar where in the midst of this beautiful place, after eating this wonderful food, I will be encouraged to make a decision that could cost me several hundred dollars a month. Oh, my free resort stay at a Marriott or a Hilton or a Hyatt. It's not really free at all. They want to capitalize on that moment in that beautiful place with that elegant free food, to use the amazing situation to hopefully try to get me to make a decision to give them some of my hard-earned money. Now, this is not to say there's a problem with having a timeshare or a vacation rental club property shared ownership thing. You may have one and you may love it. And that's fantastic. But it is to recognize that sometimes we get in these situations where we make decisions that maybe we shouldn't make. Maybe it hadn't happened at a Marriott, but it happened at a car dealer when you added on one or two of those packages as the sales guy was trying to get things lined up for you. Maybe it wasn't fractional ownership, but you put a couple extra things in your grocery cart because they just seem so good in the moment. The chances are, if they're giving you free bottles of water and snacks, they've been paid for because someone gave in the moment and made a decision that maybe wasn't the same rational decision they would have made had they not been in the midst of an ecstatic experience. And I kind of think that's what might have happened to Peter here. He got caught up in the moment. He thought he needed a vacation home on the mountain where he could go see God. He was ready to build booths and stay forever and bear witness to the power of God at all times up on that mountain. And the problem was what he really needed to do, having witnessed evidence that this was the Son of God, was to come back down from the mountain and bear witness to the Son of God in the midst of all of the regular real life things that were about to happen. Jesus isn't thrilled with the disciples after he comes down the mountain. The Father had been trying to get them to cure his child for a while, and they just said they couldn't do it. Jesus responds about the wicked, perverse generation. When are you going to finally believe? You can almost hear him exasperatedly saying. And then Jesus heals the boy. He heals the boy, making it a great story. And what I like about the Transfiguration being right next to this healing story is that when Luke puts them together, we see the contrast. We see the contrast of a glorious, amazing mountaintop experience right next to the real work. It's almost as if Jesus is showing his disciples that as great as it is up on that mountain, the important place for the belief to be nurtured is down here among the crowds. It appears that the belief and the power of God were much more at work, making a difference among the people than they were up on the mountain, because it was down with the crowd where the boy was healed. Jesus affirms my belief that the people following Jesus had access to the power of faith in ways that they were not fully accessing it. Jesus' disciples and his followers seemed dependent on something. Maybe being physically present with Jesus. But what he's saying is, no, you don't need me right here to perform these miracles. You don't need me right here to make a difference in ministry. I've given you everything that you need. It's time for you to believe. So he calls the generation wicked and perverse and says they lack faith. They fall short because they put their faith in the wrong place. Like Peter, they thought they needed to be up on the mountain to get in touch with God. And instead, what we see is that it's when we come down off the mountain, having seen God, that we have the opportunity to exorcise the demons, that we have the opportunity to access the power of God we might otherwise miss. We think we need something special in place. We need to be in a certain place for God to work a miracle, only to find that the next day there's a boy who needs healing. And it wasn't up on the mountain with Moses and Elijah that he was healed. It was down among the people. Which brings it back to us today. Too often we get wrapped up in the glamorous. We get too tied to the idea that things need to be grand, and in doing so, we miss that which is in front of us every day. We get like Peter, which is why the story is good for us. It just reminds us who we need to be, based on who we slip into sometimes being. We want to build a place that's the most beautiful instance we've ever experienced, believing that once we reach that place, then we'll experience the glory of God. But again, no one was healed on the mountain of transfiguration, and they didn't even stay up there very long. Oh, something happened up there that was very, very important. It was significant. But the boy received healing when Jesus came back down. As important as the transfiguration was, the 5,000 were healed, 5,000 were fed in a field before he ever went up. And these point to the reality that the real miracles Jesus performed didn't just happen in the holiest moments that Peter ever witnessed. But these miracles happened because the power of God was being spread and shared and pushed on the ground among the people as Jesus was meeting needs and loving those around him day in and day out. What the people thought they needed was a glorious, ecstatic experience, and what they really needed was a Savior to walk with them, among them, in the difficulties of their lives and to bring healing, and that's what Jesus did. They didn't need to go to a place to escape the difficult realities of life, so Jesus came down from the mountain and healed the boy and showed the disciples where the power truly was. And so the story of the gospel this morning is, as much as we want to go and stay at the mountain, as much as we want to get back up there, thinking that that's when life and belief will get solved, the ministry happens when we get back down. The healing happens when we come back to real life. And the experience and the love and presence of God happens in our daily lives. Not just in those extraordinary moments. I began with that silly story about my college acquaintance not realizing where the wind came from. How can there be any wind if there's no trees? The person got it wrong. It's not the wind that makes the trees, but the trees that give evidence that the wind is there. It's not the transfiguration that makes Jesus who he is. Jesus is who he is, and the transfiguration gives evidence to that. The transfiguration gives evidence that the one who's on the ground doing the healing sharing the power of God. Yes, that is the Son of God. And so today, I hope you find amazing moments that might feel a little bit like at least today's transfiguration. But I also hope you're not jumping from mountaintop to mountaintop. I hope that where you find hope and see glimpses of hope in God's work is not just in the power of God on top of the mountain, but that you see the power of God in the midst of it all. Healing and freeing and loving and providing hope on the ground where we're at. And I hope you find those glimpses of God's love amazing as well. Will you pray with me? Holy and loving God, we give you thanks for this day. We give you thanks for being gathered and for all the ways that you reach us, that you provide for us, that you heal us, and that you love us. Lord, it's tempting for us, like Peter, to think that up on the mountain is where we always need to be, that in the most beautiful places is where we need to find you. But Lord, help us also to realize that it's in the midst of everyday life, that in the midst of the crowd, you provided healing, and that it later became the belief of the disciples that you are with them always. And they came around and their lives bore witness to that also. Just as they came around, help us too to come around to sense and see and to know that your love is with us always, and that your love is just as real in the ordinariness of our lives as it is on the mountaintop, where we see something that is beyond what we could imagine. Lord, this is our prayer. Thank you for hearing our prayer in this day. Speak to us, call us, and help us as we go. It's in your name we pray. Amen.